Welcome to episode 18, the final episode of the second season of Bedtime Stories for Grown-Ups, a podcast that is created from the stuff of dreams. Once upon a time, if you were lucky, someone told you bedtime stories. Maybe someone read you books, or the same favorite book over and over. Or maybe someone made up your bedtime stories, telling you nonsensical things until you closed your eyes and let sleep take you away. These bedtime stories are the whimsical, made-up kind. Little scenes from dreamland to guide you there. There is no plot to follow, no sense to make of anything. Just a sequence of images from beyond the consciousness of day to help you let go and drift into dreamland. Here we are in Reykjavik. There are three doorbells, and we have to choose one. A door opens, and we have to squeeze ourselves sideways through a very narrow passageway. The further along the passageway we go, the wider and easier it becomes to pass through. There are many guests staying here, including a trio of young folk musicians from Quebec. We set out to explore, and we are amazed at what we find. Look at those birds sitting on that rock. There are two different types of mating pairs. One of the pairs has faces that look like Chinese opera masks, and their plumage is a shifting mist of multicolors. We have never seen anything like it. The birds look like illustrations from a fairy tale. Then we look out at the sea, just in time to catch an enormous humpback rising out of the water and breaching in slow motion. Wow. We must be walking around in some sort of saga. Back at the place we are staying, there is a very festive atmosphere. At one point, we are pushing a small sailboat on wheels along a narrow, dusty path. And suddenly we start reciting poetry together. And the poetry is quite good. We didn't even know we were poets. We didn't know we had such ancient souls. The woman who runs the place where we are staying is a formidable witch-like creative woman with a vibration in one eye. She wants everyone to climb the hills and recite poetry together at midnight. We really should write these poems down. But we have forgotten the poems as soon as the words leave our lips. There are two competing dichotomies. One of them seems like the obvious choice, but we think it is the other one that is true. They are both valid, and they are both very difficult to grasp. They exist at the edge of consciousness, somewhere in between sleep and dreaming. One is singular, single-celled, and single purpose, a standalone unit. And the other is plural, multi-celled, and multi-purpose, a host of many. They are both very important. We can see them clearly now. And then suddenly they are gone. We are not sure exactly what it is that we have seen and what we have only dreamed of. What we have imagined and what is real. But searching for the answers will definitely lead us back into dreamland. We are on the coast. We are going to launch our boat and sail south. We are not entirely sure of the route, and we don't have any charts. So we are going to have to use the sun and the stars for navigation and guess at the best route and the final destination. Perhaps if we set course for those islands in the distance and continue south, we will eventually find our way. We stop for the night near one of the islands and make our way up to the big house on the bluff. This house has been on the market for ages, but no one is buying it. It looks like a beautiful house in a beautiful location. There must be something wrong with it. Meanwhile, the house is being rented out to writers on writing retreats. The place is full of writers wandering around, eavesdropping on conversations and writing down their observations. Some of them stay up all night, drinking wine and writing nonsensical poetry. We are going to visit a famous shrine. There is a lineup to get into the inner sanctum. There is a young girl there, holding a veil and offering to take pictures of the tourists. One of the older ladies wants to get a photo of herself wearing the veil as a souvenir. It is not a wedding veil, but the kind of veil the novice nuns wear when they are going through some sort of commitment ritual. There is an elastic band that goes around your head and under your chin. It doesn't look very comfortable. We want to know how much the girl would like in exchange for all of her crayons. The little girl is very sweet and patient. She says, "You can only have one crayon." "Solo uno," we say. "Quanto cuesta?" "Un colón." "Solo uno," we say again. We are speaking Spanish. We put on our cool black fedoras and go outside, blinking in the sudden brightness of the sun. We are driving down winding roads through amazing and beautiful landscapes. At the first stop, we get out and traipse around to see all the wonders. There are steep black cliffs rising dramatically around us, and a waterfall disappearing into a crevice behind a building made of glass. Our driver is a petite mouse-like woman wearing spectacles. She is nice, but she doesn't tell stories like all the other drivers. She thanks us for giving her the beautiful poem. We don't recall giving her a poem, and so we certainly cannot take credit for it. We think it must be an Icelandic poem. This place is full of wonders. We are wandering through a grove of large palm-like trees. We notice one of the trees seems to be moving, independently of the wind or anything else. What kind of strangeness is this? We scramble up onto the rocks. There are some people with bowls of sugar water, spoon-feeding the hummingbirds. But they do not notice that the tree would like a taste. We ask if we can feed the tree. We scoop up a little sugar water onto a spoon, and sure enough, one of the treetops comes towards us and grabs the spoon in its tree mouth. It is quite something. How delightful. This place is full of wonders. Back at the building made out of glass, we notice a woman sitting outside at ground level, eating porridge from a bowl. But the bowl is inside, and the woman is outside. She is somehow sticking her hand right through the glass wall, as though it doesn't exist. How is she doing that? Is this some sort of illusion? There is a shaman school in this building. We can see some dark painted lines on the face of the woman, though these lines are not always visible. She says it is from a time that she regrets. But unfortunately, she will never be able to get rid of these dark markings. She says she has been dreaming about rivers of blood. We have been dreaming about her telling us that she has been dreaming about rivers of blood. We find a terrified child alone in an empty house. Wherever we go, this little shadow figure runs just ahead of us or just behind us. A little child shadow figure. She runs up to the terrified child and crouches down beside him. "Can you see her?" we ask. "Is this what you are afraid of?" He does see her. "She is attached to you," he says, "not to the house. Wherever you go, she will go with you. But she is not what he is afraid of. There is something else present in this house. The house is not empty, after all." We notice a tree made of glass that is full of nests with many different kinds of baby birds in them. Some of the birds are feeding their babies juicy caterpillars. Some of them are feeding their babies other baby birds. And some of the baby birds have their beaks wedged open because little tiny human babies have been stuffed into them. And now they can't close their beaks. The tiny human babies are awake and blinking. One is red-haired, and the other is dark-haired. They have blue eyes. The babies do not seem to be in any distress. Maybe they seem so content because they feel like they are going back into the womb, which they are in a way. We all are. Somehow, we managed to rescue one of the babies, the dark-haired one. What about the other one? We were too late. She disappeared into the baby bird when it finally managed to close its beak. We should call someone about this baby. We are not used to having a baby to look after, especially a baby so small that it can fit into a matchbox or a baby bird. We can see characters forming out of stardust. They all start out as blue points of light in the darkness. And then new characters are forming. It is fantastic. Soon there is a whole marching band just heading out on their daily 18-kilometer march. We are having a hard time keeping up. The band leader says we can only follow for a few blocks. Those are the rules. So we follow them for a few blocks and then decide to head in another direction. We come to a forest we have never explored before. Not too far into the forest, we come upon a small double-sided cottage. We go in. It is all wood inside. There are doors and stairs that go every which way. How many rooms are there in here? The cottage is so small. How can there be so many rooms? And then we hear the voice of a child asking about the strange entity that is moving around inside. It is as though we are the entity that is haunting the family of the house. The father is reassuring the child. The cottage picks up and moves to another location to try to get rid of us. We have to hold on. The movement is lurching and unpredictable. When the cottage finally settles down in a different neighborhood, we quietly slip away. Outside, we noticed a raven bringing down a baby seagull and a baby crow. How did she manage that? Two baby birds at the same time. She is forcing them to land. We said, "Hello, Raven." And she was kind of taken aback. What were we doing talking to her? Why were we even looking at her? Maybe we were after her catch. She was waiting for us to leave before she started feasting on the baby birds. We saw her pecking at the blue-eyed baby crow and wondered if we should intervene. But we looked away. And when it was just Raven left there on the branch, we turned back and said again, "Hello, Raven." And she said, "Why are you talking to me?" And we saw that she had a human face, although it was a feathered human face, with black eyes, with just a hint of blue and purple. We said, "Because we think you are beautiful." And she mocked us, saying, "Beautiful? Well, that's original." She was being sarcastic. But the truth is, she is beautiful. Because of her feathered human face, bright, intelligent, and sparkling eyes, and because she is actually talking to us, and we are at a complete loss for words. Sometimes we can see into the space between worlds. It is a rushing river of wind. Faces come into being and disappear. Ancient faces. The faces are carved from stone and then just as quickly eroded by the wind, like so much sand. The faces blow away. There is a risk of being swept away along with all the faces. If one gets too close, the force is very powerful. Sometimes we can hear the voices of the ancients. Sometimes they speak to us directly, and that can be a little frightening. It means that we have come a little too close to this river of wind. And we need to step back. It is not yet our time. We decide to keep going, and we find ourselves on forest paths that are shrouded in mist. Thank you for listening. Sweet dreams.